Poorly Read.
Hello, welcome to episode 5 of Poorly Read. This week we're going to be talking about chapters 16 and 17, the final two chapters in Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone.
I'm Gifton.
And I'm Tom.
And I've got to say, it was quite enjoyable listening back to these chapters.
Yeah.
I enjoyed how cinematic they were.
Yeah.
I will say that.
Special effects budget was high.
It's amazing what you can achieve with a bit of imagination and some ink and no job.
Yeah. Right, so chapter 16, Through the Trapdoor, starts with exams and shit.
Yeah.
And at the end of the last episode, I said that they decided that now was the time to go and see Dumbledore. That actually wasn't true. It happens at the very beginning of this chapter.
Yes.
After like a month of exams.
So they start their exams. They make a point of saying it was very hot. And I was like, yeah, I remember doing exams in school. And it always, obviously, it's like British summertime. And having to like plough your way through a fucking maths exam when it's like sweltering hot outside. Oh, it's like a special kind of torture, I feel.
Yeah.
Like, I can barely do maths when I'm thinking straight. I can't do maths when I'm, like, suffering under a Saharan heat.
Yeah, well, apparently they don't need to do maths at all.
Yes.
They've done all the maths they need to do by aged 11.
This is my and first
it,
point,
And
actually.
It shows. I'll wait till later, actually.
Okay. Well, my first point was, I sort of had that thought, and then I went back on that because I thought, oh, it's really bad that they don't learn basic subjects like maths, English, and science at Hogwarts. They're actually learning things that they will use after school. So really, their school system is probably more effective.
I suppose, but I mean, are they really using that much stuff? I mean, how much herbology does like Mr. and Mrs. Weasley use?
I mean, Mrs. Weasley probably uses a lot. Because she's got nothing else to do with her fucking time. So she just grows those, like, onions in her back garden. Or the blibbering shrimpies, whatever they're called. The floating ones.
Yeah, I suppose. But, I mean, science is, well, different. Like, the laws of science and nature,
yeah,
I guess, are the same. But, like, it's completely, you know, the study of science is just the study of what is true about the world. And there.
Yeah, so what's their equivalent?
I don't know.
I guess it would be potions, herbology.
Be a kind of combination of all of it, I suppose.
Yeah. But I mean, I only remember like the fun stuff from science. Like the stuff, I did find a lot of it interesting, but there's a ton of it that I was just like, boring.
Yeah, man. Like coiling of the wire, how, what is it? Copper wire insulates and, I don't even fucking remember, man. Like there's so much cool stuff about science and they insist on teaching you the most basic boring bullshit.
Yeah, not a fan. Well, I'm a fan of science, just not a fan of school science.
No, exactly.
Alas, that's over now
and we are well educated for it.
Yes, that's why we started a podcast.
Yeah,
life is going so well.
I'm fairly sure we just whinging about school science, just the most ignorant we've ever sounded. Yeah. On anything.
It's like, who needs science, man? We've, yeah, got Google now.
All right, anyway, so they're just sitting under a tree chilling after their last exam has finished.
Yeah,
after History of Magic has finished and Harry's scar is
hurting mysteriously. And he feels like something bad is about to happen, which is an accurate deduction, I feel.
Yeah, he says it thinks it means danger's coming.
Yeah.
I mean,
all
it
over
is.
His face. Yeah, so they go see Hagrid, right?
Because Harry suddenly has a kind of brainwave about Fluffy and, Norbert.
Yes.
The dragon, and where Hagrid got it and all that.
I thought that was really smart of Harry, actually. He put two and two together in a way that I don't think I would have.
No, it's powerful deduction.
Yeah, which is weird. I always think, why does Harry, like, I don't know, what's happened for him to be so skillful at that kind of thing? Because I feel like he does that quite a few times in the books. He's like, ah, this is the thing. I'm like, wow, Harry.
Yeah, he does. The thing that's very slightly irks me about that is that I feel, and this might not be entirely accurate, but okay. I feel like it's not like there was an extra piece of the puzzle that he just discovered now that allowed him to put that together. He just had to sort of sit and think about it for a bit. And at the point where it's like opportune for the plot for him to have figured it out, he suddenly has the eureka moment just from thinking about it in his own head.
Yeah, that's very true, actually. Yeah, I mean, I guess it'd be useless if he was like on the toilet and then he's like, fuck me, the guy who gave him Norbit. And then he's like, I've got to wipe and then I've got to try and find Hermione and then Ron.
No, but I mean, if there was another piece of information that he discovered and then we see how that piece of information allows him to put the rest of what he knows together, rather than just he's sitting under a tree thinking about it and then suddenly goes, I've got it.
But do you know what I was thinking? Like, does that happen in real life? Like, do we just suddenly have a eureka moment?
Well, no, like, but it's just good plotting.
Well, no, but I sort of think that maybe we do.
Maybe.
I don't always think that there's like a thing that suddenly like is the missing piece and you're like, oh shit, now it makes sense. I sometimes feel like it just comes together in your brain and you're like, oh my God, that's the thing.
Yeah, I guess so. And I suppose he has been quite preoccupied up until now with all the exams and everything.
He did not revise. No. Like, please. He was too busy, I don't know, learning Neville's Turgio spell. Yeah, so they go and see Hagrid, and he's like, Hagrid, who gave you the dragon egg? And he's like, oh, I didn't see him. He was a goy in a cloak, and I didn't see his face.
Yeah, which apparently is normal in the Hogshead.
Yeah. And I mean, it's like, I guess if you see that all the time in the Hogshead, you're not going to think too much of it. It's like, oh, I guess, you know.
Yeah, some weird characters in there.
Yeah, so he says that the guy was asking him about the creatures he looks after. And I just thought, but seriously, what creatures does he look after other than the Thestrals, which we don't even know about yet? It's still a mystery what Hagrid looks after at Hogwarts. He doesn't explain it.
Well, when they have feasts.
Yeah.
And there's hundreds of roast chickens and beef and steak and all of that.
Yeah.
Where did those animals come from?
I mean, they can't come from, like, the Hogwarts farm.
Well, there isn't a Hogwarts Avatar farm. Yeah, that's the gamekeeper's the nice term for it. Hagrid's just like, he just runs the abattoir.
Oh, God. Right, yeah, so it turns out that Hagrid told the stranger about the creatures he looks after, namely Fluffy.
Yeah.
And said, yes, well, he just said to him, you know, all you got to do is play him a bit of music and that will put Fluffy right to sleep.
And then Harry goes, I shouldn't have told you that.
Yeah, and then Harry's like, ah, oh, Hagrid. And then I think they scuttle off quite soon after that, right? Because they're like, we have to go and tell Dumbledore now.
Yeah, they run away immediately and Hagrid's like, hey, what are you doing?
Yeah, come back.
You know, yeah, shaking his fist in the background.
Any other friends?
I mean, how can he have any other friends?
I mean, unless he just paints faces on various plates that he has.
Pumpkins.
Sits around his table. Has little tea parties. So they go to try and find Dumbledore. They run into McGonagall.
Yep.
And then they're like, we must see Professor Dumbledore at once. And she's like, well, he's not here. He just received an urgent owl from the ministry. And they're like, oh, fuck. And then he's like, but it's important. And then she's like, I'm sure it can wait. And then I think Hermione's like, no, it's about the Philosopher's Stone.
Yeah. And despite everything they know, and they even run into McGonagall again in a few minutes when, like, Harry and Ron go to try and head Snape off at the third floor, she just refuses to give their claims any credence whatsoever, which kind of annoyed me. It's like, they're obviously switched on enough to have figured out exactly what's going on, this top secret. Like,
yeah, that's very true, actually. I think that's a very old-timey adult thing to do, though, is just be like, kids, you're full of shit.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to believe an 11-year-old. But when they say the Philosopher's Stone, she does a classic McGee. She's like, blah, 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 and then she drops her presents. Her presents? She drops her books or whatever. And she's like, how do you know about the Philosopher's Stone? And then they're like, it doesn't matter or whatever. We think someone's going to try and steal it tonight. And she's like, well, I can assure you, all right?
Yeah.
There's enough charms, all right?
And then I could understand if she said that to them and then just sort of thought, well, they did find out about it. They clearly have, research methods, and just went and, like, looked in on it herself.
But, I mean, she might have just poked her head through the door and saw Fluffy.
Ah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the book would be over if she'd actually gone and done that.
Yeah.
Or maybe Cruel would have killed her. God, that'd be a fucking twist ending, wouldn't it?
Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who'd be the new Transfiguration teacher? Maybe that could be Molly's job, hey?
Molly Weasley?
Yeah.
Transfiguration teacher is, like, you got to be pretty...
I mean, she does some pretty serious magic in Book 7.
So she kills Bellatrix Lestrange.
She does, spoilers.
We don't even know who that is yet.
Yeah. Yeah, so
Harry figures all this out.
Yeah, in like seconds.
Well, so like a month or whatever has gone by. I don't know where I got a month from. The whole exam period has gone past and Harry just figures it out. And the day that Harry figures it out kind of just so happens to be the day.
Yeah, that's very... Yeah, that is bizarre, actually.
Like, there's no reason for Harry figuring it all out and the day that Dumbledore gets sent away and Quirrell making his attempt should coincide.
I mean, could just be a really happy coincidence, because at the end of the day, they were just going to go and tell Dumbledore, and it just happened that that was the day that Dumbledore got called away.
Well, yeah, it just so happened, exactly. I mean, it's a coincidence.
Yes, but I think that's... It is, like, obviously it's very coincidental, but, I mean, it's not, like... I don't think it's strangely so, because they weren't planning to do anything other than tell Dumbledore on that day, you know? It was only because they found out he was gone, they were like, oh, shit, okay, this is the day he's going to try it. And so Harry gets really, like, I can't let Voldemort get the stone and become powerful again and stuff. And then I put in capital letters, he killed his parents. And for the first time, I understood why Harry gets so irate about almost everything throughout this entire series. And I sort of realised, oh, it all feeds back to the fact that Voldemort did kill his parents, and that pain is so deep that he wants to do anything in his power to prevent that guy from coming back or doing it to someone else.
Yeah, because that's it. Because I was kind of thinking, I was starting to think, almost like, why is Harry so determined to go and do this himself? And then he gives that whole speech to Ron and Hermione about, you know, that ends in, he killed my parents. And I'm like, yeah, all right, fair enough, mate.
Yeah, like,
I'll give you that one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, fine, I get it.
You're not going to shut up about your dead parents.
I get it, your parents are dead, you're sad.
Yeah, fine, we'll go to our almost certain deaths.
Yeah. I put that Hermione proves her Gryffindor-ness by saying she's going with Harry.
Yeah.
She's like, you know, oh, like, we're going to be with you in this, blah, 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 you need our help. And I was like, that's pretty, like, cool for an 11-year-old to be like, look, no matter what, I'm going to come and help you with this. And that's a very Gryffindor thing to do. So I think that's where we first see the actual first, like, indication of why exactly the hat put her in Gryffindor and not in Ravenclaw.
Yeah, she's definitely... It's buried a little deeper than it is with Harry.
Yeah.
The kind of... I mean, really all we know about Gryffindors at this point is that they're brave. And I've kind of put this sort of hot-headed impulsiveness on them as well, just because that's how Harry is, and that's like your classic main protagonist traits.
Yeah,
but Hermione definitely does have that as well. It's just buried a little deeper than it is with Harry, I think.
Yeah, I feel like Harry's a stereotypical Gryffindor. I feel like Hermione's like the kind of Gryffindor you meet that kind of makes you like them.
Yeah,
like, oh, so I guess they're not all the same then. Yeah, so they go back to the common room. They're like, we need to... They go back to the common room for like a respite or something, right?
They go back straight away. Well, no, because they had the plan of Hermione was going to go to the staff room to, like...
Yeah.
Sort of distract Snape or see if he's still there or whatever. And Ron and Harry were going to go to the third floor corridor.
They were going to keep watch.
Yeah.
And that's where they bump into McGonagall again. And she says, can you just fuck off back to your common rooms, please?
Yeah, look, you two.
Yeah.
Can you just fuck off, please? So they do, because they don't have a choice. And Hermione appears through the portrait hole, like, minutes later.
Yeah.
Having been shooed away. She said, Snape came out and she said, oh, I was waiting for Professor Flitwick to talk about my charms exam.
And then he went and
got him, yeah.
It's like the last thing you'd want. You're like, fuck's sake.
Yeah.
She should have said, I need to speak to McGonagall. I've just got my period. And he would have been like, oh dear, Turgio. Oh God, Snape. Yeah. So they regroup basically, and then they're like, okay, we need to go back to the corridor now.
Yep.
And then Neville fucking appears and decides to be like brave at the most inopportune time.
Yeah, he does. But it's kind of a nice character moment for him.
It is. But I'm also like, I just put Neville needs to chill out for fuck's sake and stop getting involved, which is for real. Because he got involved last time and then he lost the house 50 points. He's getting involved now And it's like, Neville, like, I know you're trying to be like an exemplary Gryffindor. You don't want anyone else to lose more points because of these, you know, like fucking rule breakers. But just get out of the way. And I loved when when Neville was like, you said that I need to stand up for myself. And Ron was like, yeah, but not against us.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that is like quite a classic line, actually. I loved that. And
but, yeah. You know, he thinks that they're just going to go out. He doesn't know that they're, like, you know, going off to face the Dark Lord or whatever.
Yeah, even just... if they were just going out to get drunk and, like, sniff glue, he should have been like, really, I want to be part of this crowd.
Nah, he cares about the Gryffindor win in the House Cup and he wants to get... He doesn't want him to lose any more points.
Oh, that's the kind of person I would not want to be friends with. I'm like, why do you care about the House Cup?
Everyone cares about the House Cup.
It's yeah, just... it's like, why? You don't get, like, a cash prize for being part of the house that wins it. You don't get an Amazon gift card.
No, it's not quite explained or understood why all the students give quite such a massive shit about the House Cup.
Yeah.
But they all do. It's very, very important. And I mean, we just have to accept that.
Yeah, it's just about honour, isn't it? The kind of thing that Mulan loves.
What?
Sorry, like if you ever watch that film Mulan, the whole thing's just about honour. Like,
yeah, well,
wow.
It's that part of the world, isn't it?
Yeah, but I just thought you couldn't get any more racist, could you? Honor and swords. That's what that film's about.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they eat lots of rice. And I'm like, I'm sure they eat other things, mate. Mr. Walt. Anyway, so...
Do you mean Mr. Disney?
Mr. Walt Disney. I don't like saying his last name because it gives me inappropriate feelings of happiness. Right, so Hermione casts a spell on Neville. Petrificus Totalus.
Yep.
He seizes up like a butthole in a prison and he crashes to the ground. They're like, we're sorry, Neville. And they run off. Yeah, so they leave the portrait hole and they go to the third floor.
They do. And on the way, they encounter Peeves.
Yeah.
And how the fuck does Harry accurately impersonate the Bloody Baron?
I mean, I can accurately impersonate Snape. It's not hard. Yeah, but I mean, who's to say what the Bloody Baron sounds like? I mean, yeah. And if he can't see him, I think the last thing that Peeves would think is fuck, but it didn't. I reckon afterwards he might have been like, wait, hold on. That didn't sound like the Bloody Baron. But by then it was too late and Harry was already through the door.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. And so they go into the dog's room.
The dog's room?
Yeah.
You're into the kennel.
And they play the flute to put it to sleep. I was like, well, I guess any fucking noise puts it to sleep then.
Because Harry has never played that flute before.
Yeah.
So yeah, they go. Harry inexplicably plays some passable music. I guess Fluffy is just not fussy.
Yeah.
Puts it to sleep.
Maybe they played Lugia's song from Pokemon 2000.
Maybe. I don't know what that is.
Just as an aside, that's my favourite bit of like flutey music. It's one that goes like do 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 like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And Slow King plays it on, like, the little magic shell he has. Yeah. We should so watch them at some point. Anyway, so they go through, they put Fluffy to sleep. They open up the hatch that is in the room. And it's just like a hollow, like, black abyss. And Ron's like, oh, and then Harry's like, Harry points to himself as he's playing the flute. Yeah.
Let me.
Yeah. I don't know how he fucking, like, I guess he just, like, points to himself. And does another, like, a down-pointing emotion. And everyone's like, not now, Harry. Everyone's watching.
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, no, you mean this. So he quickly passes the flute to Hermione. In the brief seconds he passes the flute, Fluffy stirs.
Yeah.
And then Hermione starts playing. I imagine, like, Hermione would be pretty good at the flute by accident.
Yeah.
She's so the kid that parents got her fucking, like, piano lessons and shit.
Yeah, definitely.
So she's like, oh, let me play this. This is Mozart's third.
Yeah, she's already, like, grade 5 or
yeah.
6 or whatever.
She, like, holds it to the side of her mouth instead. And then Harry's like, hey, I'm going to jump in. If I disappear, don't come in after me. And Ron either says okay or, like, nah, mate, I'm going to save you. I think it's, like, okay, actually.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way he's not going to go down the trapdoor. So they're just like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Good luck, Harry.
Yeah.
Godspeed. Which god? I don't know. Vishnu. Okay.
Yeah. Is there religion in the Wizarding World?
We've had this conversation already.
Have we?
Yeah. In episode 2.
Oh, okay.
And basically, you asked about the holidays and are they religious based? And I was like, the ones that they celebrate are all like actually pagan based. So they make sense. They would be like witch holidays.
Oh, yeah. I guess the holidays. But, yeah, like, but does anyone actually pray or anything?
No, she made a real point of not putting religion into the books. I think she only put the holidays in because they're, like, they're nice, festive, like, in, like, English things.
Yeah.
And the way she celebrates them in the book are very English.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, with the crackers and, like, the penny and the fucking Christmas pudding.
Yeah. I remember when my grandma used to do that.
Yeah. My grandma used to put shards of glass in ours. Anyway, yeah, so Harry jumps down, and then Ron and Hermione follow suit, and they land on something squidgy, which turns out to be...
Devil's Snare.
And my thing for this is that this is one of the few times that the movie scene was better than the book scene, because they get trapped in it, as you do in Devil's Snare, and then Hermione's like, oh, God, how'd you get out of this? I'm trying to remember. And then she does. She says, like, Devil's Snare, something, something, something else. It's like a rhyme they learn in herbology. But it might even be a rhyme. It's just like a...
Something, something, something else. I think that was it.
Professor Sprout was like, yeah, so everybody remember, Devil's Snare, something, something. I couldn't care.
Yeah.
Rolls up her magic herbology grass, sits in a chair, lights that shit up.
Yeah. He's like, so guys. You know that's Professor Sprout's deal.
Professor Sprout, I feel like, hasn't, like, ever progressed past the woman she was in the 70s. You know? You can just tell she just still keeps that hair, like, loose and fancy free. Her, like, robe is, like, decorated in flowers and shit.
Yeah.
So they all relax. So Hermione relaxes, as she does. She's like, you need to relax. Frankie says relax, and then she slides through the thing, and everyone's like, I don't get that reference. And Harry's like, I do. And then they all manage to fall through. But in the film, I think Ron can't relax because he's Ron. And then she's like, ah, and then she does this awesome spell called Lumos Solem, which casts sunlight out of the wand.
Yeah.
And let me backtrack. Yeah, so they relax, and it starts to loosen, but Ron keeps on moving. So Hermione's like, she does the rhyme, and it turns out Devil's Snare doesn't like her fire. And then she's like, oh, but I've got nothing to burn. And then Ron's like, are you a witch or not? And she's like, oh my God, yeah, my wand. So she creates the blue flame spell on the Devil's Snare.
Yeah.
And then it lets them all go, and they fall through. But in the movie, she does the Lumos Solem spell, because Ron can't relax.
When you say fall through...
Yeah.
They just climb out of it, don't they? In the movies, I feel like I remember
they
someone
fall through in the movies.
Someone
maybe they
sinking
climb
down
out.
Through, but
I think they do in the. So okay, they might not in the books then, but in the movies they cast she casts the Lumos Solem spell, which casts sunlight directly out of her wand at the Devil's Snare, and I think that's such a boss spell, and it really I wish that she'd incorporate that into the books.
Easy tan.
Yeah, right, or melanoma. So like. But I think that spell would come in useful in so many different situations. And if you can cast sunlight from your spell, you could defeat many a foe, you know?
Vampires.
Yeah, they would just burn right up.
Yeah.
Probably spiders too. Giant spiders. Foreshadowing. Yes, I just thought that was a scene that is the rare example of a scene being better in the film than in the books. I thought. Anyway. Yeah, so the next... So they get out of the Devil's Snare.
Yep.
And then they walk into...
Room full of shiny, glittering birds, and Harry thinks they're all going to come and peck at him if he moves out into the room, but he runs across anyway because he's brave, doesn't get pecked to pieces, finds the door on the other side, and it's locked. Hermione can't Alohomora it.
Or what?
Yeah.
No way.
So it is possible to make a door that can't be Alohomora'd, but apparently only if the solution is in a fun little escape room type scenario. And they realise they're not keys. Sorry, they're not birds flying around their heads. They're keys. And I just sort of thought, why all these charms that these like top wizards have put on this stone to keep it from falling into the Dark Lord's hands, who's going to use it to put the world into a, you know, shroud of darkness or whatever. Why have they made all these trials like fun little puzzles?
I completely agree.
With the solutions there in the room, you've just got to figure it out.
Yeah, like, my big point about that, and I've sort of put all of the challenges that they have and are yet about to face in this quest to get through all these doors. I put why they all seem, like, quite stupid protections, as they are all solvable puzzles.
Yeah, except there's a room with an unconscious troll in it that has already been beaten by the person who did these trials before them. And that's the best one, in my opinion. It's a massive troll. They say it's much bigger than the one they beat in the bathrooms.
Oof.
They find there's some brooms in the room. They fly up and grab the
most old-looking key that matches the doorknob.
Yeah. So that's that fun little puzzle sorted to protect this life-giving stone from the Dark Lord. And they move into a giant chessboard room.
Yeah.
And they discover that they're going to have to take the places of three of the pieces. And I mean, Ron is, you know, Ron's like pretty good at chess.
Mm.
Better than Flitwick / McGonagall, who it's later said this is credited to.
I mean, I feel like I get the feeling that she just created the chessboard in general. I don't feel like she put like an impossible, like to make it an impossible game to win spell on it, you know?
No, but chess is a game of skill.
Yeah.
Like, better players beat worse players.
Yeah.
And so I would have thought the skill of the person who created the chessboard would be the skill level that you have to beat.
I mean, maybe. I mean, but maybe Ron is really good at it.
Maybe he is super good. Although, actually, the move that he wins with... I mean, for one thing, he says... Okay, this is just pedantic chess bullshit, but just humour me. They say, Harry, take the place of the bishop. Hermione, go next to him and be a castle. A castle is not next to a bishop, but whatever. And Ron's a knight, and he says, I take one step forward, the queen will take me.
Yeah.
A knight can't take one step forward.
Yeah, it has to move in an L shape, right?
Yeah, and then it says, Ron, you know, took one step and then the queen slammed into him. It's like, that's not how knights move. And if the opponent, and then the move after that, Harry is able to move in for the checkmate. If Ron was able to bait the white queen out from protecting the king from checkmate just to take a knight, then the white player is, that's like the most, they're a truly shit chess player.
Wow.
Anyway, that's my little chess rant. Then they move into the troll room.
The troll room.
And they shuffle past it quickly because it's already knocked out. That's already done. They say, oh, I'm glad we didn't have to fight that one. Then there's Snape's little bottle poison riddle thing.
Yeah.
Again, with a sheet of clues to help you.
Which is, it's so bananas. It's so bananas because it's so, it just, why? Why would you have it?
Why would you have it?
You wouldn't. Even if this was like Indiana Jones, everything he bypasses is designed to kill you.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time it's by luck he happens to avoid being killed. And so that makes sense. To have a potion thing with a sheet of clues to help you out, that means you have literally created this thing and designed it to be broken.
Yeah, it's a puzzle that's designed to be solved, like a little game.
Why? Why?
Yeah, I know, right?
It's like, it is really bizarre to me. That is a genuine question I'd love to ask.
Mm.
Okay, right, so the riddle goes as follows. Danger light, shall I read it in my Snape voice?
Okay, maybe just to try and make this bit slightly less tedious.
Yeah, it's quite long, so...
Should we just not?
So how many bottles are there? There's seven bottles.
Seven bottles. Three poison, two wine. One takes you back, one takes you forward.
Shit, son. Poison tries to hide. You always find someone Nettle's left side.
Yeah, even though there's three bottles of poison and only two bottles of Nettle wine. Which I still think that doesn't make any sense.
But if you would move on, neither is your friend. Oh my god, it's quite a convoluted clue, I think. Yeah, well, whatever happens, Hermione manages to solve it.
Yeah.
And she's like really sure about it, which I like. I like when someone's like got conviction in their choices.
Yeah, she's got it.
Yeah, and she drinks one to go back because Harry, there's only enough potion for one person to go forward, I believe. So Harry takes that one. She takes the one that lets you go back. And he's like, go back upstairs, go find someone, I think, if you can.
Yeah, probably grab Ron, send an owl to Dumbledore.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Then he takes the other one. He steps forward into the black flames that are ahead of him. And then when he emerges on the other side...
The idea of black flames is kind of cool. I
thought that was like, pretty cool too.
I don't know how that would work, but I want to see it.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it looks like the black flame candle in Hocus Pocus.
Take your word for that.
So yeah, he comes out on the other side and he expects to see Snape, but he sees... Dun, dun, dun.
Can you guess? We haven't spoiled it throughout this whole series yet. I don't think.
Imagine if it was Neville. He's like, I don't know how I got down here. I just get to unlucky now every time I walked forward. It's like, I just want to go back home. It's like, Neville, your grandmother doesn't want you. Like, get over it.
You live here now.
Yeah. This is your home. Yeah, he sees Quirrell.
He sees Quirrell.
The mirror of Erised.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
And there's a whole bunch of discussion that we could have about when Quirrell met Voldemort based on what he says here.
It turns out that, because I think you'd wondered when Voldemort possessed Quirrell, and I said he'd done it straight away, and it wasn't.
Yeah, because he says, I was a foolish young man then.
Yeah, and he says that after the failed Gringotts robbery,
yeah,
then Voldemort needed to keep a closer eye on him. And he sort of insinuates that that's when Voldemort got in the back of his head. So yeah, that answers the question about whether, and that's why Harry's scar didn't hurt when you first met.
Yeah. Because he didn't have Vold head yet.
Yeah.
But he had been in cahoots with Voldemort.
Yes.
For, I mean, years before that?
It sounds like it, but I'm pretty sure he only met Voldemort when he was in Albania. And I'm wondering if he was looking for Voldemort or if he just stumbled across him.
Maybe, but I think the Albania thing might have been years ago.
Oh, yeah?
Well, because Hagrid says early, way back in the Leaky Cauldron, he knows that Quirrell's all stuttery and frightened, and because he says, oh, he's afraid of his own students half the time. So he's been a teacher in this stuttery, nervous guise at Hogwarts for at least a year.
Okay.
Before that point, because Hagrid knows that that's what he's like.
Well, then he can't have been the Defence Against the Dark Arts teacher for sure then.
Because, says later, because they haven't been able to keep one for more than a year. But again, I just think it's an inconsistency.
Yeah, but I mean, he doesn't say he was a Defence Against the Dark Arts teacher. So he
not could explicitly.
Have been anything else. So yeah, basically, Quirrell explains, as all good villains do, explains exactly what has been going on the entire book. Basically just gives all the exposition that you need. It was him who has been trying to, like, kill Harry in weird ways. It turns out that Snape had been trying to save Harry all year, which Harry's shocked by.
Yeah, and again, I know I made this point last week, but if Snape knew that Quirrell was trying to kill him, why just let him carry on and think I'll thwart his next attempt? Just fucking call him out on it and have him arrested.
It is a bit bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe he didn't know that Quirrell was the one doing that spell, though, on Harry's broom.
He did know. He says that Snape knew. Snape knew what I was up to, and we hear Snape confronting him about it.
Yeah.
So, and if Snape knew, you assume that by extension Dumbledore knew. And yeah. Dumbledore knows everything anyway. It's like, why were they just waiting for him to, thinking, okay, we've got an evil teacher who's aligned with the Dark Lord in our midst. We know who it is, and we know he's trying to kill Harry, and we know he's trying to get the Philosopher's Stone. Let's wait and see if we can thwart his next... No, just fucking get him.
Yeah, that is so true, actually. But I mean, Dumbledore's a really old man, and he needs to get his rocks off somehow. You know, he was just sitting up in that study, just, you know,
watching it all happen.
Yeah, just got his little tub of, like, Wizardaline, a box of Wizard Kleenex.
Yeah.
Just rubbing one out, thinking of all the exciting ways that Quirrell might kill Harry. Oh,
God.
He's like, oh, yes, I like it when they shed a bit of blood.
Maybe when they touch, his skin will blister.
Oh, pustule. Oh. And all the fucking headmaster portraits are like, oh God. Yeah, so basically after Quirrell tells him everything, he unwraps his turban and it turns out Voldemort was living in the back of his head.
Yeah, but not before Harry, he hears a voice and says, use the boy, and brings him over to the Mirror of Erised, which I think we have also omitted to say is down there.
I did say that in the beginning. Okay. But yeah.
And Harry feels the Philosopher's Stone arrive in his pocket. Well, that's handy.
He feels it arise in his pocket. And then Quirrell was like, is that the stone or are you just happy to see me? He's like, it's the stone. He's like, no, wait, it's not the stone. Yeah, so that happens. And yeah. Harry sees himself in the mirror, opening up his palm and the stone's in his palm, and then putting the stone in his pocket and winking. And then real life Harry feels the stone appear in his pocket and he's like, what?
He's like, tries what? To,
like, shit, son. And he tries to play it cool.
Yeah.
But Voldemort catches on somehow.
Yeah, Voldemort just knows because powerful wizards know things.
Yeah.
Yeah, then he says, I would speak to him face to face. Master, you are not strong enough. I have strength enough for this. I remember those lines from the movie because Quirrell starts unwrapping his turban too early before Voldemort's finished saying anything he was saying. Anyway,
oh, really? Yeah, so he turns around, and the description is so much more frightening than it is in the movie, I think.
Yeah.
Because they describe it as the actual Voldemort face that you sort of... half of what it is in the movie, but with, like, red snake eyes.
Yeah, red eyes.
They're sort of like eyes of Sauron, but in, like, two of them, and in a face.
Sorry, but regular eyes.
But, yeah, so it's like, oh, my God.
He tells him all about how he killed his parents, and...
he loves to trot that one out.
Yeah. Even though it was his downfall.
Yeah.
And he says that they were brave. His father fought bravely, but your mother didn't need to die. Yeah. She died protecting you.
And it's like, oh, my God. Mm. Yeah, and then what happens?
One thing leads to another.
No, that's it. Sorry. Quirrell/Voldemort knows that the stone is in the mirror, but doesn't know how to get it. So when Harry looks, he says, what does the boy see or something? And then Harry goes, oh, I see myself holding the Quidditch cup and Dumbledore shaking my hand.
Mm.
And then he's like, he's lying! And I think that's when he asks him to take off his turban so he can see him face to face or something.
Yeah. Then he does the whole spiel about how he killed his parents.
Yeah.
And it basically ends up in Harry trying to sort of run away. And Voldemort saying, seize him!
Yeah.
So Quirrell goes to grab him. I also feel like we should say, because we made a whole thing about why they drink unicorn blood, he does sort of address it. He says, unicorn blood has been strengthening me.
Yes.
Which is all the explanation we get, but I mean, at least it was acknowledged.
Yeah, and it sort of made him sound like when he's not in Quirrell's head, he has a little bit of a substantial form.
Yeah.
That is maybe a slightly more Peeves-like than ghost-like. And I was like, huh, that's peculiar. I'd love to know the actual, like, dynamics of how, like, a bit of soul let loose on the world works. I'm just curious. I'm sure J.K. Rowling has a really well-developed answer for that. yeah, so...
Sassy.
I'm sort of waiting on a phone call. So, like, look, you little shit.
Yeah. Why don't you just shut up.
Yeah. I've got a fucking castle. I own a real-life Hogwarts. What do you own? I've got a Tamagotchi. Yeah, well, that says everything, didn't it?
Sorry, miss.
So Quirrell lunges for Harry, touches him and goes, ah!
Yeah.
And he starts blistering.
Yeah, and then he's like, oh, I can't touch him. And Snape, Voldemort's like, get him, seize him. So he's like, oh, okay, runs back and tries to grab him again. And the whole time I'm thinking, you have magic. There are other ways to seize him.
Literally.
You idiot.
And he just wanted him dead, by the way. He could have just Avada Kedavra'd him right there.
Yeah, I mean...
Maybe Voldemort didn't want to risk the rebound happening again.
Yeah, maybe. But even if... I mean, the first thing Quirrell does is magic up some ropes to, like, bind Harry.
That's so true.
And then Voldemort says, seize him, he's running away. And he grabs him physically, and then it burns him. So he's like, oh, shit, I can't, it hurts me. And then he's like, no, you got to get him.
Should have been like, mage hand.
And he just, and he just grabs him again with his hands. And he's like, oh, I can't possibly grab him any other way, even though I did it like 2 minutes ago.
Yeah, I can only imagine. Yeah, for someone who's used magic their entire lives, you wouldn't think to get physical straight away.
No.
You would go for your wand straight away.
Especially when doing it physically pains you and blisters your skin and like is going to result in your eventual death.
He could have just... did like Accio Harry.
Does that work on people?
Maybe not, because he tries Accio Hagrid in book 7 and it doesn't work. Hagrid is half giant, so he's impervious to a lot of spells and fucking heavy as well.
Yeah.
So maybe the spell tried and the spell was like, sorry, if it's over 10 kilograms, it just can't.
Yeah, an error message came up.
Yeah.
It was over 100 megabytes.
Yeah, so anyway, he carries on trying to touch Harry. Just like Michael Jackson. Maybe if he had a Michael Jackson glove, he would have been a successful groper.
Yeah.
You know, no burning.
No fingerprints.
Yeah. It's okay, man. It's all right. This is all love. That was a disturbing impression. Yeah, so Harry blacks out and Harry thinks he might have died. But just before he blacks out, he hears Dumbledore going, Harry!
Yeah.
Harry! I kind of want to know if Quirrell just died from his injuries or if Dumbledore just secretly, like, killed him.
Yeah,
I'm
don't know.
I'm hoping the latter.
Yeah.
I like to think that Dumbledore killed him, and then since the body was there and Harry was passed out, he just arranged them both into like salacious poses.
And just took pictures.
Yeah. Or just like opened his eyes really wide so he could put it in the pensive later. And just like,
Now, I feel like if Dumbledore could have saved Quirrell, he would have. I feel like that's just kind of the guy he is.
Probably. I mean, he probably had a ton of questions.
Yeah.
But yeah, what we don't see in the books, but it does happen in the movie, Voldemort flees Quirrell's head after he dies. But you don't see that in the book.
No, Voldemort gets away.
Somehow.
He just gets away. Fine.
I mean, so if he went away, Dumbledore must have seen him, like, disappear or go.
Yeah. But I guess, you know, maybe probably even Dumbledore doesn't have a lot of experience in, like, restraining an ethereal piece of soul.
I mean, who knows what he does in his spare time, right?
Yeah.
So then Harry wakes up in the hospital wing, and Dumbledore's like, so naturally, Harry, what went on in the depths of the dungeons was a complete secret. So naturally, the whole school knows.
Lol.
Yeah, and I'm like, how? You fucking told them, you silly bitch.
Yeah.
Literally no one else was there that's alive.
They can't know everything about what happened in the very end bit because Harry regales Ron and Hermione with that tale when they get... Although there have been rumours, I suppose.
But from who?
Ron and Hermione, with the bits that they saw.
I feel like maybe Ron would have told the Weasleys about the trials. Hermione wouldn't have told anyone, I don't think.
No.
But yeah, if the final bit...
Fluffy and the Philosopher's Stone was a secret throughout the whole year that Dumbledore sort of announced at the beginning
of the
year.
That's so true,
No one found out about that except Harry and Ron and Hermione through some extensive prodding.
Yeah, extensive prodding.
Hey.
He's like, look, if you tell me what I want to know, I'll put it away. Hermione, you can leave. I just want Ron in. Everyone's like, oh, Ron does like his classic Ron face, like... I keep on forgetting that faces don't register on podcasts.
People can't see the face you're doing.
Maybe next time I'll just get Tom to take the pictures of me making various impression faces and we can put it on Instagram.
Oh, I'm sure that'll have just the same effect.
Well, if you see it once, if I just do a library of faces, then I'll reference those in particular. People will be like, I remember that one.
So when you listen to the podcast, you've got to have Gifton's face index.
Yeah.
Up. It's almost like we should have started a YouTube channel instead.
Oh, what extra work. So can't be bothered.
No.
But we do try our hardest for you guys. I hope you know that.
Yeah. We got a little home studio set up and everything, and it's fully legit no matter what anyone says.
Yeah. I mean, look at that desk. Right. Right. So Dumbledore and Harry have the greatest of conversations.
Yeah.
And Dumbledore does the usual Dumbledore and doesn't tell him all the most pressing answers to the most pressing questions.
No.
Which we find out later in the books that it's because he just didn't think Harry was ready to hear them. Which, I mean, maybe at 11, it was a bit much. But, I mean, whatever. I think he could have told him something, not necessarily all of it. But he tells Harry that the reason why Quirrell couldn't touch him is because when his mother died for him, the sacrifice... It was basically a spell that was cast with love, and that's what made the curse rebound onto Voldemort. And that's why when Voldemort touches Harry, it burns, it hurts, because his mother's blood lives on in him. So does his mother's love and his mother's protection. And because Voldemort has no understanding of love, the feeling of it is literally deadly to him. And I was like, oh, okay. I hate that thing of love being the answer to it all and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm just a bit
I mean, it very often is.
Yeah, and I hate it.
In these fantasy tales.
Yeah, it's no, I don't want love to be the answer to it. I want I don't know, just being cool to be the answer.
But then, so as well as that, Harry asks why Snape hates him.
Yeah.
And Dumbledore says, because Snape went to school with your father, if you didn't know. And then your father did the thing that Snape couldn't abide. He saved his life.
Yeah.
And now he never forget. I was like, what?
Yeah.
What?
What, do you not remember?
No.
Oh, so Sirius told Snape, because Snape was always snooping around them guys trying to find out what their deal was. So on a full moon night, when there was going to be a Shrieking Shack sesh between them all as animaguses and Lupin as a wolf, Sirius told Snape that if he wants like the answer to his questions or whatever, to go through the Romping Willow and to the Shrieking Shack on this particular night. So Snape got there and Lupin was fully wolfed out, and Lupin was going to attack Snape, but James, I think D and Amay just and dragged Snape. Did get attacked, but luckily he wasn't bitten, and James managed to drag Snape away and out through the other side of the Romping Willow, thus saving his life from Lupin. Yeah, so that's like the life debt that he owed to him.
I see.
Yeah, and Sirius hated that.
But I feel like a lot more focus is put on the Snape being in love with Harry's mum thing.
Yeah, for sure. That, because that is the actual reason why he's looking after Harry.
So yeah, there's that. So Snape's ongoing efforts to save you all this year were to make up for the life debt that he feels he owes your father. So he did. So Dumbledore was just fucking sat in his ivory tower the whole time, just going, "Oh, looks like Quirrell's trying to kill Harry. Oh, Snape's trying to save him. How interesting." just fucking do something, man.
I just feel like, literally, he's such a shit stirrer. Do you know what? I bet he's the one who was fucking under that cloak in the Hogshead.
Yeah. He just loves being the one sat at the top, overseeing everything, just watching all the little pawns play out his game.
Yeah, I mean, I just think he's so bored of life.
Mm.
And I think he's so lonely that he just loves watching this all play out because it gives him a sense of purpose. I think he can solve things. So he's almost like a omnipotent god. Like, he's always got a reason for not intervening.
Yeah.
You know, and it's for, you know, like, whatever reason that's not really a reason, but it's like, well, he's God, so we'll just accept it. And it's like, well, I guess so, okay. Yeah, because he could have stopped all this. Oh, he could have done so much. One of my big points was because Dumbledore says he's just spoken, not just, but he's recently, post-cruel death, he's spoken to Nicholas Flamel and they've agreed to destroy the stone.
Yeah.
So my whole thing was, why was the stone even removed from the vault in the first place if the decision to destroy it wasn't made until after Quirrell's death?
Well, they knew it was going to try and be stolen somehow.
How?
I don't know, but they knew, because that's why they took it out of the vault.
Did they say that?
No, but I feel like that must have been why, because it got tried to steal it on the same day Hagrid took it out.
Yeah, I just thought that that was, like, serendipitous.
Yeah, maybe. And also, does it ever get fully explained how Quirrell was actually able to break into Gringotts?
No, because he didn't even have Voldemort in the back of his head.
No, he was just a wizard who successfully broke, didn't steal anything, but successfully broke into and out of a Gringotts vault.
I mean, I can only assume that he did it in much the same way that Harry does it in Book 7.
Well,
because you need a goblin hand to open that particular vault, so yeah, he must have.
And then fucking crashing a dragon out of the roof.
No, because the vault isn't in the dragon section. Because there are obviously really old vaults down there, but for whatever reason, that one wasn't. It might have been like adjacent to the dragon section. But maybe because there was only that one thing in it, it wasn't a high security vault. But yeah, I just thought that was really odd, like, because they don't say anything about knowing that Quirrell was going to steal the stone. They just get it out of there, and then they go through all this bother of trying to hide it for the year. Then they decide to just destroy it in the end anyway. It just seems, it's super weird. Why would you even move the stone?
Yeah.
It's lucky they did, obviously, but why?
I mean, when did they take the stone off Nicholas Flamel and put it in Gringotts?
I feel like Nicholas Flamel keeps it in there and then only takes it out when he needs to make more elixir and puts it back. Because it's his vault.
Yeah, so after, well, during Dumbledore's thing, we get the classic, alas, earwax line. And now I can't hear the word alas without thinking earwax after it now. Thanks for that gifting. And then, as Dumbledore's on his way out, or Madame Pomfrey says to him, you have another visitor. He says, oh, good, who is it? Guess who it is, guys?
Harry looks at the cup of water on his nightstand. He sees, like, the ripples of fear. And then in fucking bolsters Hagrid, crying, saying, it's all my fault.
I mean, at least he acknowledges it this time. At least he shows some remorse for putting Harry's life in danger.
I mean, this would have been the opportune time for Harry just to take a big gulp and be like, Hagrid, I know I've got a lot to thank you for, but I sincerely hope that everything you do in this life fails. And then Harry just like sets his mouth in a straight line as like a single man, tear just falls down his face. And Hagrid's like,
I guess I'll be making my way out then. And Harry's like, yeah, I think you better had. Just silently walks out. And Harry breathes a sigh of relief as he thinks, oh, thank God I'll never have to deal with that fucking oaf again.
Yeah, that would be a nice story conflict resolved.
But instead he's like, Hagrid! And then Hagrid's like, oh, I'm sorry. He's like, oh, don't worry about it.
Yeah, and then he does give him a great present.
Yeah, he gives him the photo book.
Yeah, he gives him the really nice present, the photo album.
And he says that he had reached out to everyone he knew to ask if they had photos of Harry's parents.
Yeah.
And I did think that was pretty special, actually.
Yeah, that's something, a way in which Hagrid adds to Harry's life in a positive way.
Yeah. And it's the kind of thing that, like, someone who was, like, super manipulative, knowing that they'd royally fucked up, solves it all by giving, like, the best present, really, yeah. You know? So Harry's like, oh, okay. And Hagrid's like, what's that in your hand? And then Harry's like, no, it's nothing. And it was, like, the whole speech that Harry was going to give him.
Yeah.
Like, no, it's fine.
Oh, no, I guess we're still friends then.
Yeah, I guess we're still friends. I really hope you've not got a younger brother. Yeah, so I put that Madame Pomfrey needs to chill the fuck out.
Yeah.
She's not even a real nurse, you know?
Is she not?
I mean, I don't think so, just because that would make it easier for me to fire her. She's like, oh, you've been here for longer than 15 minutes. You need to fuck off.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, sorry, Ron and Hermione come. And then she tells them all to piss off after 15 minutes.
Oh, we missed Ron and Hermione. Yeah, I think we have. They arrive. Harry tells them all about what happened down in the chamber and stuff. And he said it was...
Ron's like, bloody hell, mate.
Yeah. and it says it was one of the only times where the truth is more exciting and engaging and whatever than all the rumours that have been flying around.
I think that's mostly the case in any given scenario.
Yeah.
Don't you usually find that the actual truth of a situation is way more fucked up than, like... I mean, if it's, like, shocking enough to keep secret, it usually is pretty twisted, right? I thought, where the fuck are you pulling this from? I don't know.
Right, so that all ends and wraps up.
Just quickly, I would like to say that I think that Madame Pomfrey has Munchausen's by proxy.
Well, you're going to have to explain. You've got a weird, like, encyclopedic knowledge of, like, mental conditions that I just do not have. I don't know what that is.
Well, I had to ask the doctor to explain what my diagnoses meant. My God. That was a terrible joke.
Well, I don't. You so might have it. I don't know.
No, yeah. Should I laugh? If I laugh, is he going to kill me? I don't know.
Yeah. Munch? Is he going to munch me? The only time I've heard that word is in the Eminem lyric.
Oh, what does he say?
It's in Cleaning Up My Closet.
Oh, is it about his mum?
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so Munchausen's is when you fake illnesses and stuff because of the sympathy and attention you get from it,
right?
And you almost do it compulsively. Munchausen's by proxy is when you make someone else ill, usually without them knowing, because you love them being dependent on you for care and you love the sympathy you get from other people. So Munchausen's by proxy is usually refers to, like, say, a mother who keeps on making their child sick. Yeah, so I think that Madame Pomfrey has that, and that's why she keeps everyone sick in the hospital wing. That's why you're only allowed to be in there for, like, 15 minutes at a time, because if you go longer than that without having an extra dose of her special medicine...
Just so that no one sees her administering.
Yeah, she's like, here, I think you need some more skelly grow. And he's like, no, I'm fine. My arm's... No, I think you need more. Yeah. And by the end of it, he just looks like the fucking elephant man. And she's like, oh, I guess you have to stay here for 6 more months. She just sits in the office, like, rubbing, like, oil into herself. She's like, oh, they're so sick. They need me so badly.
Yeah, she's definitely got that.
Yeah.
All right. They're in the cut to Great Hall.
I mean, that's the next thing that happens, right?
Yeah. They're having the feast, end of term feast, and it's all decked out in Slytherin shit.
Yeah.
Because Slytherin have won the House Cup.
Slytherin pride.
Yeah, and then Dumbledore stands up and gives his whole speech and gives Ron, Hermione, Harry, and then Neville at the end the exact amount of points they need to just overtake Slytherin.
Well, I feel like you're sort of like, I think if you tell the whole run up, it's more like exciting for the
listeners. Well, yeah, I know. I have just butchered that whole section there. But everyone knows what happens.
I like this bit. Okay, so Dumbledore says, he goes, right, blah, blah, blah. Slytherin win the house cup at 300 and whatever points. But in light of recent events, I think some extra points need to be awarded. And everyone's like, what? So he's like, to Mr. Ronald Weasley for playing the best game of wizard's chess seen in half a century or whatever, I award 50 points. To Hermione Granger for the use of cool intellect and something else, 50 points. And then he's like, and to Harry Potter for showing nerve and not being afraid of things and just being a general pain in my ass, and for giving me the best wank bank material I've ever had, 60 points. And I was just like, yeah, again, those are almost exactly the points that they got taken away from them just for being out of bed. Harry saves the Philosopher's Stone and, like, yeah, and defeats the Dark Lord again, and he just gets 60 points. And I'm like, wow, this school just fucking takes and gives points like just nothing has any value.
I mean, these point amounts sort of make some kind of sense. It's just the one real anomaly, the one real stray point, yeah, on the graph
is McGonagall's
taking away 50 points each.
Yeah, you're right. Because if she'd taken away, say, like 5 points... No, correct. Let's say she'd given them 20 points each for the troll thing and then taken away 5 points each for being out of bed. Let's say she'd given them 15 points each for the troll thing, 5 points each for being out of bed, and then Dumbledore would fucking lay these points out at them. That would make perfect sense. You'd be like, okay, because there's, like, an algorithm to it. It's her fucking, you know...
Yeah, she's just random.
I mean, we all know she was on the precipice of best orgasm of her life.
Yeah.
So maybe in that way they did deserve to get that much taken away from them.
Maybe. They ruined it for her.
Yeah, I mean, if that was me, I'd probably just had them expelled.
If I'm in my office having private time, I don't want some little shits.
If I'm in my office and I've hung that tartan scarf on the doorknob, you know what that means. She grabs Harry's head, puts her hands on either side and, like, turns his head towards her office. What's on the door, Lord Potter? Your tartan scarf? Exactly. And what did you do? I was out of bed. Exactly. I'm sorry.
Are you going to come and finish me off?
You and your nimble fingers. Anyway, so they drew with Slytherin, or rather they draw with Slytherin. And everyone's like, oh, this is bizarre. What do we do now? And then he's like, and lastly, to Neville Longbottom for showing true bravery, because it takes courage to stand up to one's enemies, but even more courage to stand up to one's friends. First, I thought, mate, I don't think they're his friends yet. His dorm mates, maybe, but that's it, really.
Yeah, they haven't his really housemates. Had much. I mean, Hermione got him out of the leg lock curse, and Harry gave him a chocolate frog.
And they're friendly then.
Yeah.
He gives Neville 10 points.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a bit too much. I would have given him like 5 for that, I think.
Well, he only needs to give him 1.
To be fair, yeah.
And then, yeah. And so...
He's like, I give you no points, but just know that you get a cheeky smile from me. He gives him a little dumb
to you,
win.
Sir. Yeah. Slytherin still win.
And yeah, so Gryffindors win. They win the House Cup. McGee fucking loves it, of course. She loves having that House Cup.
She loves that House Cup.
She does love the House Cup.
I reckon she's finally gonna get there. She's
gonna sit on it, you know.
Maybe she'll be less uptight next year.
Like Harry goes to pick up the House Cup from the office. He's like, oh, it's all sticky. She's like, oh yes, I forgot the cleaning spell. He's like, what for? You know, Potter.
Yeah, so Flipper and I needed a receptacle.
I mean, I'm sure like the handles of it are quite knobbly, so they just get in all the right places, right?
Oh, God.
Jesus Christ. Tom, stop making me say such horrendous things. Yeah, and that's sort of the end of the book, right? They sort of finish up term. Everyone has a big laugh. They get the train back to King's Cross. Turns out there is a guard who sort of like stems the flow of kids going through the gate, so there's not to arouse suspicion on the other side of the barrier.
Yep.
which I was like, oh, okay, I'm glad that she put that in. And then the Weasleys are there, and so are the Dursleys. And Ron and Hermione are like, oh, have a nice summer, I guess.
Yeah.
And then Hermione's like, she says something like, oh, I'll write you. And then Ron's like, yeah, and you guys, you have to come and like come and stay with me over the summer. And Harry's like, oh, yeah, that'd be cool. And then he sees the Dursleys. And I was just amazed that Vernon even showed up.
Yeah.
It's like, I would not do fuck all for this kid. But he shows up, even after the pigtail and everything.
Well, that wasn't Harry's fault.
But I feel like they think it is.
Well, yeah, they probably do. If I'm getting inside the head of Vernon Dursley, then yeah, I'm surprised he turned up. But I mean,
I reckon that Petunia's like, look, you need to go and get Harry. And he's like, oh, I don't even know why we need to have that boy back here. And yeah. She's like, look, he's got nimble fingers.
That's going to be Harry's nickname. old nimble fingers. So yeah, then he goes home and says, you know, they don't know I'm not allowed to use magic over the summer. I'm going to have a lot of fun with Dudley. Fine.
And then it's literally the end.
Yeah.
And I was like, I thought there was a bit of a better ending to that book. I would like a wrap up sentence, like, and with that, he climbed into the back of Vernon's car, put on his seatbelt, put on his ball gag, and then they drove off into the sunset.
I guess. I don't know. I'm not sure if that really adds anything. I quite like it. Because the way the book starts out with him having such a horrible time with the Dursleys, and now it's kind of come full circle in that he's going back with the Dursleys, but after his experience and what he's been through, he's got something to take back with him that's going to make it bearable.
Yeah, that's very, very true.
So it kind of brings it all back around, I suppose.
And I guess 6 weeks at home is not that bad when you know you're going back to Hogwarts.
Yeah, and he's hopefully going to see Ron over the summer at some point. But we'll get to that. So, book over.
Yeah, we've come to the end of the Philosopher's Stone.
We have. Do you have any kind of general thoughts on the overall?
Yeah, so my final thoughts for the book. I am surprised at how much I enjoyed it. Because most of my memories of book one come from the film. And I don't like the film at all. And I've only listened to... I tend to not listen to book one a lot. I've listened to it a few times. And I think every time I do listen, I do enjoy it. And then I forget how much I did enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm also surprised at how much I enjoy it, despite, and I say this with all the love in the world, despite how bad it is. I sort of feel, and I mean, you know, I say that, it's not bad. Obviously, I can totally understand how it completely captured a generation. And I was part of the generation that it captured. Like, I think we've made it pretty clear over the series that we're both massive fans and that we love Harry Potter. Like, yeah. We're not trying to rag on it, like, seriously.
Yeah.
But I think this first book, anyway, was kind of supposed to be just sort of a fun little story with lots of little fun wizardy quirks that you're not supposed to look at too closely because they don't really make sense. But, yeah, and because that's not really what it's about. It's about just a fun little book with this cool magical world that kids can get absorbed in. And it is that. Like, it does that really well. But then as the series goes on, it kind of becomes a more full and almost like more serious kind of robust fantasy work.
Mm.
And starts to try and explain itself in these really in-depth ways. And so when you go back to the very beginning, when it wasn't really trying to be that, when you scrutinize it in that way, it does fall apart a little bit, but then it wasn't really ever supposed to hold up to that level of scrutiny is, I think, kind of what I think.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, what you've always got to remember, I guess, is that this was her first book. So it's probably her first, like, full-length novel. I doubt that she wrote anything of significant length before this. I know she'd written quite a few, like, short stories, obviously, throughout her life. And she'd probably written quite a few, like, articles for things. But this was her first novel, as far as I know. And so a lot of the things that she would get better at as the series goes on, she obviously hadn't quite perfected yet, which is understandable. And I think for a first, like, written work, it's actually really, really good.
Mm.
And I think the most impressive thing about it is just the amount of imagination that is actually in it. I mean, I know that she borrowed from a lot of different, like, things and... there's a lot of debate about how original some of her, like, plot points or, like, character things are. But I think even if they're not entirely original, even being able to abstract those things from pre-existing things was like impressive.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, she wasn't the first person to do Boy Goes to Wizard School. She just did it better.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's certainly not the first person to do innocent orphan protagonist rises up to defeat Dark Overlord. That's any fantasy story.
Yeah, I agree.
But she did it better. Like you say, there is a lot of really, really great imagination in it. There's so much in it that I read that, you know, while going through it, I was like, that's awesome. Like Gringotts and like the centaurs. And that's, you know, those are just kind of little things, but they, it all kind of makes up the world. And yeah, we've kind of poked fun at it and like drilled down into in like to like minute detail stuff that was supposed to be just a fun little frivolous thing. but overall, it was great. And I can see why it captured the generation that it did.
I still can't quite put my finger on what has made it such a phenomenon, and we're very much a part of that, and we are drawn to it in the same way that everyone else who's a massive fan is. And I still can't quite put my finger on what it is, which I think is true of a lot of things that are phenomenons, and I guess that is the definition of one. You can't fully explain why it's become as massive as it is.
Yeah, sometimes things just hit the zeitgeist.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it is a case of that. For me, I think what I like so much about this is that it's a fantasy story which manages to be so relatable. Even though it's like a magic school and everything is so fantastical, it's all so easy to imagine and picture as you're reading it. And I think because you're singing it, you're experiencing it from the perspective of a boy who is seeing it all for the first time as well. And all the things that you see and happen, they're not too out of the ordinary. Even though they are magical, everything is still sort of based upon like a regular like muggle system. There's nothing that is so out of the ordinary that you sort of can't, that you're like, it doesn't resonate with you.
It's got a very, very shallow, easy learning curve.
Yeah.
And part of that is the device of having the main character be completely innocent to the whole thing and needing everything explained to them as well, and having him have the sense of wonder that you want the reader to feel.
But yeah, I think that's what's good about it. I think that's probably why it attracts such younger readers as well, because it's not too hard to imagine the things. I think it sets up a real nice, I think you sort of get the flavors of everything that you're going to experience. And I feel like mistakes that she might have made in this book, she tends to not make it. She makes some of them again, but she doesn't make them too much again. Like the ridiculousness of like the trials to get to the stone, nothing like that crops up again. Everything that they do have to overcome to get to a like an object or something is stuff that does appear quite like insurmountable, or does have a reasonable amount of like security that you would expect, you know?
Yeah, I remember in broad strokes everything that happens throughout the story, but I can't remember in minute enough detail whether that is the case or not. So I wouldn't have said there are loads of logical inconsistencies in this book either until I read it with that kind of eye.
Right, yeah,
so sure. I'm interested to read the rest of it and see.
Yeah, me too. I'm excited for carrying on. So yeah, that brings us to the end of Philosopher's Stone. We're actually going to finish the book properly by, and this is very exciting, doing a commentary to the first Harry Potter movie.
Yeah.
And we're going to have a special guest for that episode. We'll leave it until the actual episode to surprise you with who it is. But yeah, so that's going to be exciting. The movie is proper shite, so I can't wait to like rip that to shreds.
To use the East London term.
Yeah. And I'm very much looking forward to starting on book two, which is Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. It's my personal favourite Harry Potter book.
Yeah, I remember, because I read through the series time after time as a kid, and I remember when I would get to the Chamber of Secrets, I would always feel really excited by starting to read that book.
So yeah, I hope that you'll come back to join us next week for the movie. I was going to say movie criticism. She's kind of accurate as to what it's going to be.
It probably will be that.
The movie roast.
Yeah. or the film roast, you know, to use the English.
I would say film is what I would class Prisoner of Azkaban as.
Yeah.
Movie.
When a movie reaches a certain caliber, it becomes a film.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed what you listened to so far.
Yeah, we're looking forward to doing the Chamber of Secrets. If you want to email in and tell us anything, any corrections, comments, tell us why we're idiots or whatever.
If you just want to tell us how you feel, you know, express any concerns you might have over, you know, your financial situations or anything like that. I'm just looking for some gossip, really. Yeah, anything salacious, email us in. I can't promise we won't turn it into the authorities, but hey, that's what's exciting, right? You're never going to know.
Yeah, we're going to get that reward money, definitely.
Right? I'm actually really curious as to how reward money works. Like,
I feel like it's not really a thing, is
same,
it?
Same.
It's a thing in movies or films.
Yeah, but I think that I know that the guy who sort of dobbed in the Unabomber, he got the £1 million reward for it in the end.
Yeah.
Our American listeners will know all about the Unabomber.
Good, because I do not.
Yeah, I'll tell you another time.
Yeah, let's not. Let's
story.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's it for this week's Poorly Read.
We didn't actually tell him the email address.
Oh, shit, son. Sorry. Yeah, the email address is poorlyread@gmail.com. Check us out on Instagram and Twitter @poorlyreadpod. Yeah, and, you know, if we had a Patreon, I'd want you to subscribe to it.
But, yeah, definitely. I mean, by the time you listen to this, we might have a Patreon.
Yeah, I mean, we've got tons of exclusive content. Like, you know, Tom can burp the alphabet.
I mean, I'll give it a go.
Maybe we'll just do sort of like a soap opera where I be Alan Rickman and you can be whichever Harry Potter actor you can do an impression of.
Ooh.
Yeah, that'll be a deep dive for you to find one.
Yeah, okay.
And we'll do like...
I might do Peeves because he's not in the movie.
Yeah, okay. We can
did
do
you
like...
know, I think it was going to be... I want to say Rick... Wait, not Rick Wakeman. What's his fucking name? Oh, for God's sake. I started a point and I can't even remember the fucking guy's name. The guy who was in Bottom.
Oh, my God. Alan Rickman. Not Alan Rickman. No, I know who you mean.
Rick Wakeman's the guy with the keyboards.
The guy who's in... it's not Alan, the guy, he was in Drop Dead Fred.
Yeah.
What's his fucking name? Rick Mayall.
Rick Mayall, yeah. Thank you. I think he was going to be Peeves and they shot scenes with him and they ended up cutting
it. No, that would have been great.
Yeah. I'll have to look up whether that's true before I keep that little tidbit in the pod or not.
Yeah. But yeah, maybe that could be what our little Patreon thing is. We just do like 20-minute episodes of what Snapes and Peeves like midnight conversations are like.
Well, like they like Snape and Peeves host a radio show. Yeah.
So welcome to midnight and
oh, I'm not gonna try and do Peeves's voice.
Well, Peeves can be anything you want.
Yeah, but
Peeve, I just imagine he sounds like a comely court jester.
A what court jester?
Comely, I don't know what I meant by that.
All right, we're off the rails. Sorry. Here.
Right, so thank you for listening and come back next week. Or don't. You might have had enough of us by now. You gave it your best shot. Yeah, so I've been Gifton.
And I've been Tom.
And Hagrid's been Hagrid. Bye.
Bye-bye.